This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. How we doing? How we feeling? You know, 6-7 weeks into 2020. I think that's long enough where you can start to assess, you know, am I on track? Is this what I wanted for this year so far? If not, what adjustments can I make? You know, for me, in the last couple weeks, one of my favorite adjustments that I made, a new thing in my life, is that the Discord for this show, the back-to-back Discord, has been humming along. We got over 150 members. Maybe it's closer to 200 now. And if you like what you're hearing here, if you like talking to like-minded people, if you're a music producer and you want to meet some other producers, share your work, get some feedback. All of that good shit is happening over on the Discord. There's a link in the description of this episode where you can go check that out. And speaking of being on track, of executing a plan, of having a good year, I've got Yuletron on the show today. Great guy. Really like talking to him. And Yuletron just announced his Rave Prom tour, which is going all over the country. He's got this rave prom concept for it. We actually talk a lot about it in the conversation. It sounds super fun. It sounds like the kind of party I would actually want to go to. And if you have listened to this show before, you already know I'm not going out to just any party anymore. So you got to catch that tour. He just got off tour with Troy Boy. You know, he's been playing all over the world. EDC China, Hard Summer, been hitting all the festivals, collaborating with people like Marshmello, Kazo, and even the platinum hip-hop star Jay Park, who we also talk a lot about in this conversation. Some really great stories about that guy. So check out Yuletron. There's a link in the description of this episode. You can go keep up with him, follow him, check out all the music, go see him on tour, all that good shit. And I'll tell you more about our conversation in just a second. Before I do, I would be remiss if I did not tell you that Back to Back is presented by Serato today. I love Serato. I love seeing new people get into Serato. You know, it's a company that I've been working with and using their products for so long, but in doing these ads for them, I've met a lot of people who are just finding out about them for the first time. They're finding out about the excellent customer service, the fact that they really care about the people using their products. And the product I want to talk to you about today is Serato Studio. This is for all my producers out there. Serato Studio is a new beat-making tool that is here to help simplify the path between you and your creativity. It's not here to replace your current working situation. It's just here to be a great tool and asset for you to use. So if you've been feeling like you need to inject some new energy into your production process, if you just want to have some fun making beats in a new way, check out Serato Studio. The interface is super intuitive. It's clean. It's fast. It comes built in with tons of samples, loops, effects. They've got some great features in there. You can change the key of your entire project with a single click. They've got their proprietary pitch and time algorithm. So working with samples, manipulating audio is really easy and it sounds great. And whenever you've made something you like in Serato Studio and you're ready to take it into your main DAW and really, you know, just finesse it up, polish it, make it sound perfect, it's very easy to export stems out of Serato Studio into whatever your main production software is. And right now, I've got a special deal just for listeners of Back to Back. If you go over to serato.com/studio and sign up for a subscription to Serato Studio, use the code WillieJoy2, that's WillieJoy and then the number 2 at checkout, to get 2 free months of Serato Studio. No obligation to you, that's 2 months to play around with some new software and make a lot of new music. So go there right now, serato.com/studio, and use the code WillieJoy2 at checkout to get 2 free months of Serato Studio. All right, so Yuletron, we recorded this one a little while while ago. I caught up with him at the tail end of when he was touring with Troy Boy. He came over to my place in D.C. We sat down. I was sitting on the couch. He was sitting on a stool. I respected that move because usually I give people the couch. It's a little more comfortable. But he just pulled up the stool, no questions asked. And we were drinking some spicy tequila at the start. We were sipping it. It was a really nice vibe. And he's somebody where we share a lot of mutual friends, but we had never met before, never even really talked before. And I actually even ended up picking him up at the airport, which is something I never do, but he was coming straight off the plane and kind of that was the only time we could do the interview. So I said, yeah, sure, of course I'll pick him up. I don't think he was expecting it to be me. He was a little taken aback. We had some fun with that. You'll hear us joking about it. And once we started talking, I was fascinated, man. Really interesting story. I personally took a lot away from it because I think his grind has been so independent and so different from the grind that a lot of people have had to get to where he's at. And it's still ongoing. I mean, you can tell hearing him talk, you know, he's got big goals, as they should be. But he's doing great. He's working with a lot of cool people. And I just liked his energy overall. I don't want to go too deep down the rabbit hole. I just want to let you guys hear these stories. We had a great time doing it. Shout out to Yultron. And shout out to you, the listener. And if by the end of this episode, you're enjoying it, if you like what I'm doing over here at Back to Back, if you're a first-time listener, let me actually rewind this for a second. If you're a first-time listener, you got to go back, scroll back in the feed of the old episodes. I've done almost 150 episodes of this show so far. I've had some amazing guests. I guarantee I've talked to some of your favorite artists on here. So go back, check out the old episodes. And after all of that, if you like what I'm doing over here, I want your support. The best way that you can help out and help support this show and help to enable me to keep making this show, to keep making it bigger and better and getting cool guests every single week. The best way you can help is just by spreading the word about this show. Word of mouth is how we grow. It's how we've always grown. I could not do this without the support of the community of listeners who are so awesome. Many of them are now hanging out on the Discord that I mentioned earlier, which you should also go check out. But all I want to say right now is if you like this show, put up a tweet, let people know, tell a friend who just loves music as much as you do, tag us in your stories. I'm at Willie Joy. The show is at Back to Back Pod. Anytime I see somebody tagging us, I'm always going to be replying, reposting whatever you're putting up there, and just generally hanging out with you. Getting to meet you guys is the best part of doing this show. I say it every week, and it is still true. And if I can help you out in return, I'm always down. If you have any questions, any comments, any concerns, anything that's going on in your own life, and you just want a sympathetic ear or you want some advice, whatever you're looking for, backtobackpod@gmail.com is the email address. All right, all the business is out of the way. I want to get into this right now. I had fun. I think you're going to have fun too. Enjoy it. This is me and Yultron back to back. Let's go. Straight from the airport.
Straight from the airport. I didn't even know it was Willie Joy picking me up.
That's how we do, baby. Door-to-door service. And you say you were out in Dallas just chilling, like taking a little vacation time?
Taking a little vacation. Just got off social media for like a week. And now I'm back on the grid.
Hey, baby.
I feel the anxiety creeping up.
Dude, it's almost instant for me. Like, it's so weird how it works.
Can't stand it.
Oh, my God. I had this realization. I've said this on the podcast before, but I had this realization where I used to, like, wake up and the first thing I would do, like, still in bed was, like, look at my phone, you know, look at Instagram or something like that. And then I would wonder why I felt so bad all day. And the second I stopped doing that, and now I try not to do, like, any social media until the afternoon at least. And it's just every single day is so much better. It's crazy to me the effect that it has on me, even though I know that it has that effect. Like, right. It doesn't help, you know?
It's like heroin, man. I mean, not that I know what it's like to do heroin, but, you know, it's almost just like you're addicted to this platform, right? This thing. And
yeah.
You can't stop getting on it. And then you just got to cold turkey it and just kind of just...
Well, and it's tough because for what we do, I mean, you have to engage with it a little, right? Or at least that helps.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that's, you know, when you, as much as we all want to think of it as a business and try to treat it as that, like, of course it creeps in, you know, and then you find yourself scrolling for an hour. And
yeah. It's the biggest waste of time for sure.
It is, man. It is. Do you have systems in place for how you deal with it on like a day-to-day basis?
No, I think my managers have no access to my stuff.
Yeah.
I know a lot of artists, their managers will help post stuff here and there and, you know, help schedule certain things and,
yeah,
you know, ideas on what they want to post or just helping with the branding. For me, I'm just pretty much all, it's all me. So I do have to keep on it.
Right.
But I do take the occasional week. This is the first time I've taken a week off of social media and this year actually. And I feel fucking incredible. This
yeah.
is like something I got to do maybe like once a month even.
That's a great idea, man. And it's interesting too. I think you could even, no one's really doing this, but I think you could almost build that into an artist brand in a way,
yeah.
you know? Like as long as your fans know that this is the time when you're off, you could, I'm not saying you specifically, but like any artist, you know, you could encourage your fans to do the same thing. I think there's ways to do it healthily. I just feel like none of us have really.
That's so funny because my manager just told me the same thing.
Really?
He was like, that'd be a great idea if you should just make that your thing, take a week off and promote healthy, you know, or, you know, promote good mental health.
Yeah.
And time off of social media and time off of being sucked away into the internet.
Dude, I'm with it. I think that's the wave. And I think too, like everybody needs it. It's not just us, you know,
right.
It's the people who listen to the music we make. It's
sure.
Fucking everybody needs that.
No, what I realized is, you know, so a quick story before I get into this,
yeah.
You know, a few weeks back when I started this tour, I found out that this fan of mine, that I became friends with, obviously, like, you know, from always coming to my shows and, you know, just she's being super cool. She took her own life a few weeks back.
Wow.
Due to just depression, you know, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, a comparison to social media. When you see other people, you think everyone's just happy and
yeah.
you have to live your life to the standard, which is not even a real fucking thing. It's like a...
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a this completely whole, fake world.
Yeah. So when you don't live up to this and you feel sad and you feel a certain type of way, you just like, you automatically think, oh shit, everyone else's life is good but mine.
Yeah.
And you kind of just, that's what fucks people up. And I realize that that's kind of what was happening with me, where I'm constantly comparing myself to other artists and stuff like that, where I'm like, oh, well, look at this guy's life so fucking perfect. Whoa, he gets to play this show. He yep. gets to do this. He's buying a fucking Ferrari or whatever. But it's like, look, it took me a long time to realize that shit, man, like this guy's probably just thinking the same exact thing as me with someone else that he's comparing himself to.
Oh yeah.
I don't know.
And maybe he bought that Ferrari with money he didn't really have because he saw other people had, you know,
you never know, right?
There's so many levels to
right.
it, you know? And fuck, man. I mean, I'm really sorry to hear about the fan of yours who passed away. That's tough.
It's just crazy because obviously it's not the only fan of mine that I've you know, have known that has passed away in the past like few years that I've been doing this.
Right.
It just makes me realize that, man, people can just come, like young people, you know, they come and go, man. Like people die. It's like a, you know, it's a thing.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to be old, you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. certainly even in the music scene, we've had so much of that in the last few years, you know, especially in the rap scene.
Yeah, man.
Like all these young kids just.
Rest in peace, Peep.
One after the other, man.
Juice
all of them. It's crazy. And I mean, and that's, you know, probably more of a drug issue than it is like a social media.
Definitely a drug issue, but maybe it is a social media thing and they turn to drugs because it's a way to help them cope with certain things, you know?
For sure. I mean, all of those people were heavy on social media. You have to assume it would affect their mind state in one way or another. And, you know, drugs are certainly one thing people turn to deal with anxiety, depression, all those feelings.
Right.
But it's wild to me, man, just how, you know, all the brightest lights of that scene just decimate. It's a wild time. And, you know, for DJs too, I mean, we've lost people. We've had people take steps back and kind of really sort of dead their career in order to take care of themselves. And
yeah,
I'm glad we all seem to be thinking about this more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
I mean, so for you, like if we're turning the clock back a little bit, you know, before social media was such a heavy requirement and before, you know, we were even smart enough and mature enough to really realize what was going on with our lives, how did you start? Because you were born and raised in LA, right?
Yep. Born and raised in LA.
What's a childhood in LA like? Because I've only been to LA as an adult.
I grew up in East LA, which is, you know, I'm the first generation Chinese American. My parents were extremely poor. You know, we shared an apartment with my parents' best friends. And they had their first two kids, and it was me.
And what brought them to America?
My dad actually came to America when he was 18 years old. So my grandfather was brought here, paid for by my, I guess, granduncle.
Okay.
So my grandfather's brother.
Right.
He was a first generation American here. So my great grandfather came here when they were building the railroads.
Wow.
And he was like an herbal doctor, like a Chinese doctor. So my granduncle came with him because he was the oldest one in the family. So he came with my great grandfather and they were out here in America. So he sent for my grandfather back in Hong Kong, and my dad, and along with his five siblings, came with him. So my dad got here when he was 18. And when he got here, I think he did about like half a year of high school, and then they drafted him to the Vietnam War.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So my dad's been in America ever since then, and he went back to, he did business and stuff. So he became an accountant and then went back to Taiwan and met my mom. And then they kind of, you know, came out here and started their own lives together. And
what an amazing, insane experience, man, to move all the way across the world only to be drafted into war 6 months later.
I know.
I can't even imagine what that must have felt like.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
And my pops, he passed away 2018. So it's about to come up in 2 years.
Sorry to hear that, man.
Nah, it's life, man. It's just, you know, something that I've grown to accept.
Yeah.
That, you know, you got to cherish life, man. I spent a lot of time with my dad in the past few years and got to enjoy as much time as possible. So there are definitely no regrets there.
That's good, man. Yeah, I think, you know, I think the best any of us can ask for, right?
Right.
Is just enjoying the time that we have.
Yeah, we're all going to go, man. We all have our time, and it was his time. And at least I saw that and took the opportunity to make it right, you know?
Right.
But yeah, growing up in LA, I grew up in East LA, a lot of Mexicans, Hispanics, right? A lot of Asian people. Wasn't the nicest neighborhoods. So
yeah,
grew up around a lot of, I wouldn't call them gangsters because, you know, I know real gangsters and we're just shitheads, you know? Grew up around a lot of bad kids.
Right.
Trying to be gangsters, I guess.
Yeah. Gang adjacent kids.
Exactly. He's like, I'm going to go gang banging, but I got to do my homework later at 9. You know, got basketball practice tomorrow morning. So,
yeah. We can go rob these people, but I got to be home by 8.
And that's literally what it is, though.
Yeah.
Like some of these guys I knew were just the craziest motherfuckers. And did the craziest fucking shit, but still respected their parents. Like, you know, oh, I got to be home, like for real, right. You know, like that type of shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's levels to realness, right?
Yep.
Because sometimes the wrath of your parents is going to be worse than anything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your
especially
homies
with your
be.
Asian parents. You don't want to fuck with the Asian parents.
Were yours pretty like stereotypical in the sense of like high expectations?
Yeah, definitely high expectations. My dad wasn't around too much when I was a kid. He did business overseas. That's a whole nother story, but yeah, he wasn't a part of my life for most of my childhood, I would say.
Okay. So it's you and your mom.
It was just my mom, my younger brother too. I have a little brother, but, yeah, it was just us. And my mom she wasn't like strict where she would like hit me or anything like that, but definitely high expectations, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for Asian American kids growing up, I think the last thing you want to do is upset, like, and disappoint your mom or your dad type of thing. So,
right.
I know a lot of white kids, you know, I grew up with a lot of white kids too. And man, like their parents never gave a shit, bro. Like, let's be real. Yeah, like, yeah. Just try harder. Oh, maybe you like, you know, like, I don't know. Just,
yeah.
They weren't I mean, there's a lot of smart kids. They got, you know, good grades and stuff. But for the most part, as long as they tried, it was right. Good enough, you know, right. For the parents.
Just yeah. Assume that, you know, they'll figure it out
right.
Eventually.
Right.
Yeah, I think especially for, and obviously this isn't my experience, but at least from the people I've talked to, the children of first generation immigrants, like there really is a weight to that, you know?
Yeah.
And at least a lot of my friends who have been in that situation sort of describe it as like, you know, it's like, just sort of a pressure that's always there because you know you're so close to what your parents went through and, you know, where you came from to get you to that point. And for you, were you musical at a young age?
Yeah, I've taken like, you know, piano lessons since I was like, I don't even remember what age. I was so young.
Mm.
But I played piano, played violin.
Did you like it back then?
Yeah. I don't think I like practicing.
Yeah.
But I think I enjoyed playing because it was easy.
Yeah.
I think I've always been one of those kids that was like, you know, the teacher would play something and I would just play it. And it was easy for me to imitate. And they'd be super impressed. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, I could do it. You know, and it'd just be more of a... So it wasn't like a natural thing of my liking it. It was more like... I liked impressing people that I could do it so easily.
Yeah. And you know what I mean? Like a natural aptitude for it, maybe.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is always, I mean, I think that's how a lot of us find sort of whatever becomes our path early on is it's just what, you know, comes easily to you at first.
Right.
Because no kid, you know, you like the hard work and the practice and all that has to be learned. I don't think there's any kid who immediately is like, oh boy, practice.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Going into high school, all that. Were you even really thinking about like, what is the rest of my life going to look like? Or were you kind of just existing, playing some music on
going
and
into
off?
High school, I was like, I was dating my high school sweetheart, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I started a band in high school and didn't really do anything with it. It was just more...
Something to do.
Yeah, something to do. I don't think I was... I never really thought about music until maybe my sophomore year in college. But that's when I was like, yeah, I want to start a real band. I want to go on tour. And I met these kids that lived... I went to UC Riverside.
Okay.
So there were some local kids in Riverside that had a band that was blowing up on MySpace. We used MySpace back then.
Oh yeah,
for the kids who don't even know what the fuck that is. That was the original Instagram.
I miss those days, man.
Yeah,
you want to talk about when social media was fun?
That's you want to join my train, Bo? Bro? PC for PC. Well,
all that shit, man.
You know, so this band was like popping on MySpace, and I happened to be friends with them. And it really helped me out in terms of building, I guess, like learning how to build a following from just nothing to something. Yeah. Not that my project was anything big, but it was doing all right on MySpace, right?
Yeah.
Got some good, you know, traction on plays and stuff like that. And then I kind of just took that and just kept running with it, man. Like, I got into rapping. I started rapping and producing my own beats. And then that in turn, you know, I met a bunch of producers, like EDM, trap producers.
Right.
You know, they needed rappers on their songs. And I...
Funny, and that was kind of your in.
That was my in. Like I did some songs with this guy, .com, who's one of my best friends now. Oh, yeah.
I know .com.
Yeah. So he, we did a song where I rapped on one of his songs, and that's like how we first got into it. And I just started producing, like, you know, more dance music, like, you know, trap songs.
Well, how did you even learn to produce in the first place? Was that, did you learn that while you were still in the band days?
Yeah, I was like already kind of like just making beats. Like I was on Pro Tools.
Yeah.
So I bought a little, it was an M-Box.
Dude, it's so funny you say it because I come from a band background and I learned Pro Tools before I learned anything else. Right. So I just thought that's how you would make beats is right. on Pro Tools. Yep. And
just with samples and stuff. And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
exactly what I did.
Moving audio around. And yep. God, once it took me so long to figure out how much easier it could have been.
Yeah. But it gave you a good perspective on, there's a thing where it's like, you know, some of these kids are so good at producing and sound designing now these days because they'll sit on, you know, whatever VST they make their sounds on now,
yeah.
you know, and just crank away at like dialing shit in like real tight on whatever they think sounds cool. And there's tutorials and all that shit. But like one thing I noticed that it helped me with was the bigger picture of a song, right? And learning in Pro Tools back then, there wasn't any sound design. It was mainly just like, oh, you had, you know, what VSTs? There was like...
I mean, like Waves and...
Waves, yeah, obviously. Yeah. And it was Nexus, yeah, like Nexus
right,
one,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
I can't even remember. I had so many like...
I mean, I barely knew about synthesis back right. then. I mean, I was really just chopping samples
audio.
For the yep. most part.
Same like old records and yep. stuff like that. I was producing hip hop. So it was
right.
like a lot of old like royalty-free samples that like were just old records, right? Just like sample those and just put a hip hop beat over it.
Sure.
But in terms of like just creating though, like... being able to create a song, like, oh, this is where the verse comes in. This is where the hook is. And this is that. And like kind of building a song that way and focusing more on the vibe and actual like magic of the song.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, this is where the drop is. And this is like, you know, this yeah. is like a new synth. This is a new bass that no one's ever heard before. I made it like fucked around and oh, I... You know?
Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean, man. You know, like it's different ways of thinking about creating because you're absolutely right that I think a lot of modern dance music can feel so formulaic because, yeah, either people are just trying to get to the drop or they're just sort of following the formula of all these songs that have come right. beforehand. Whereas, you know, a band or even a rapper, you can do whatever you want. You right. can make the song any way you want. And it's more about sort of how do I, you know, make this a full arc? How do I make this a story people can follow?
Yeah.
And yeah, I like that way of thinking, man. That's actually, I think, a pretty good tip for any young producers who might be listening is you can get creative with your arrangements.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Get creative with your arrangements. And also just like creative with the whole... I hate the word brand.
Yeah, I do too.
I fucking hate
it's
that
unavoidable.
Word. But it's like, even within that song, right, there's a mood that you set. So, quote unquote mood of the song.
Yeah.
Like you can even like make the songs more like, more fun even, as opposed to just like, oh, here's a fucking sample that's like, yo, we're on another planet. You know, like some crazy, like right. I get it. It's like, dubstep and like all this bass music, it's like metal, like yeah. in the 80s, where it's like, it's just so new and everyone's like, yeah, metal. Like, but it's like, yeah, dubstep is the same fucking shit. But there's no one creative. Like, I mean, there are creative people and those ones are obviously the ones that are,
yeah,
you know, doing it. Like,
yeah,
the big guys.
Innovating and yeah,
right.
all that.
But like, a lot of people just don't think deeper than the sound, you know?
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. We were talking about our mutual friend Kurt Flostradamus earlier, and I've talked to him about this a lot, where there was this shift, and I don't know exactly when it happened, when producers started making music to impress other producers rather than to make people have a good time.
Yeah.
And I don't even think it's a conscious decision on a lot of their parts. I think it's just people sort of thinking that's what they should do.
Right.
And it's tough, man, because yeah, that's my head is very much focused on fun at this point.
Like, same.
I don't care about almost anything else.
Same. Same.
And that's how it should be, man. And that's, you know, those are the kind of people I want to attract to anything I do anyway,
sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And there are people who like to, you know, go like just super nerd out on the sound design and all that. And I'm like, I nerd out on it too, in the sense that I like to hear a new crazy sound. I'm impressed by it.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, for what really makes me happy inside and feel something, it's not always it, like if that's there, that's cool, but it doesn't have to be there to make me feel it. You
right.
know what I mean?
So, I mean, one of my favorite producers of all time would be like Porter Robinson.
Sure.
And, you know, that's an example where it's not the craziest sound design.
Yeah.
Literally feels the whole fucking time. And these songs make me feel a certain way. And obviously, now it's more of like a nostalgic thing, you
yeah.
know, where I'm like, oh man, that just gets me every time I hear Sad Machine. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because like, I remember the moment when I first heard Sad Machine, or even like, you know, Spitfire, or like his old shit, like whatever it is, you know, that inspired me, or Scary Monsters. Like,
right.
You listen to it now, I'm like, damn, the production is kind of whack on this shit. Like compared to now, like whatever's
right.
happening now.
Sure.
But it's still like back then, I was like, damn, this was the craziest shit I've ever heard in my fucking life. But it's like, just because it's not popping, like, you know, like in terms of production now, it still hits, it strikes that, like, it hits that bone.
Yeah,
you know, you're like, fuck,
absolutely.
This is like the greatest song. Like this song changed fucking dance music, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, well, and if you want to talk, you know, people like Skrillex, Porter Robinson, those are the people we're talking about who are, you know, pushing shit forward and I
sure.
think really leading the charge. And if you look at what they're doing, I would argue, especially for Porter, I mean, they're moving further away from the crazy sound design. Like the Virtual Self stuff, which I love, I mean, that's, mm-hmm. it's very simple in terms of like what kind of synths he's using.
Sure.
It's not overly complicated. It's way more about what you said, the vibe and
vibes,
just, you know, and I think the arrangements are interesting. It's a lot of sort of non-traditional choices
yep.
and retro vibes and the whole thing, it comes together so well. And yeah, those are the kind of choices I really admire, man, because
same.
Those guys at the top of their game, that's what they're choosing
bold,
to
bold
do.
Bold choices.
Yeah.
You know, not giving a fuck. I think that's the ultimate, right? Is when you see, and that's inspiring.
Right.
Because as big as you are and people are still like, yeah, fuck it, I'm doing what I want.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
This is tight. This is cool to me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put it out.
Yeah, yeah, and, yeah. And doing yeah. it in a smart way too, I think, because I think it's easy for people, you know, if you say like, well, really the key is like to just not give a fuck and do whatever you want, which is true, but you know, they're able to do it and present it and package it in a way so that everyone can still understand what they're doing
sure.
and get on board. That I think is the real key.
And you know, in a sense is the genius part about it, right? Where it's just like a lot of people have crazy good ideas and are great songwriters or, you know, good at this and that, but it's like the overall, like we were saying, like the way you package it, the way you release it, the way the songs are written and all of that is just as one thing is, that's what makes it a genius, you know, it makes it genius.
Yes, it's in the details, I think.
Yeah, where it's like everything about it is just like, wow, like this guy did it like the right fucking way, you know?
Right. And yeah. then the craziest part about all of that is that when it's done really well, like they usually do, what it ends up looking like is actually kind of simple, you
right.
know? Like it's very clear, it's concise. You sort of know what it is the second you hear it, the second you look at it.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing to do, man. That's the
yeah.
craziest part to me. It's like all the work and the thought goes into it to make sort of the sleekest, most like just immediate shit. I don't know. There's something magic about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legends, man. Legends amongst us.
Absolutely. Well, what was your early exposure to electronic music? So, I mean, if you're in the band days.
I mean, even back then, even though I was in bands and stuff like that, I was still going to raves, man. I was doing drugs.
And SoCal fucking, raver.
Yeah, man. Like, doing a shitload of drugs and fucking just raging, man. Like, all my friends were into that.
Yeah.
You know, I was into it. My first rave ever was 2009, Together as One, at the Staples Center, it was Armin van Buuren playing an 8-hour set.
God damn.
8-hour set. Dead Mouse was on the outside small stage.
Right.
Like, he was playing, literally he was playing like the small fucking stage. There's only maybe a few hundred people there. It wasn't that many people watching Dead Mouse. Like, right. Dead Mouse was, this is before Ghosts and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? So super early Dead Mouse. And I mean, Armin van Buuren, especially in that era, you know, he was, that's a superstar.
Yeah. I mean, still is.
Still is, absolutely.
But back then,
yeah,
those 8-hour set, you know what I mean? And I remember like that was like my first big rave. I mean, I had done some underground shit, you know, like the little like, not house parties, but the little like, you know, underground raves that, you know, had like 100, 200 people like in San Bernardino, like right. Just random spots. But that was my first big rave. And I think that was one of the first times where I was like, wow, like I can't believe that people DJ to this many people.
Right.
You know, like this is a real fucking thing.
Yeah,
that
this
thing.
Even exists. Yeah.
Yeah. A Staples Center. So, or no, it was a Coliseum or one of those, the USC Coliseum, right. I think is what it was. But even then, that's got to be at least like 20,000 people, right?
Huge, huge.
So I was like, wow, this is so many people. This is insane. And, but the first song that ever got me into wanting to produce music was probably like Bass Cannon, maybe by Flux Pavilion.
Crazy song.
Or like a Dr. P song, like Sweet Shop or something. One of those songs. It was like
that era of dubstep,
one of the UGK like joints, you know?
Yep.
Was it UGK?
It's UKF.
UKF is what it is. Yeah, because, I was like UKG. Yeah,
well, because UKG is like a genre of dance music.
Right.
It's, yeah,
it's UKF.
UKF is the outlet that's that was doing all the dubstep.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, that or like Skrillex, you know?
Yeah.
It might have been Scary Monsters. I don't know.
I mean, that was that. That's the answer for a lot of people. Man.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
that record changed a lot.
That's what made me want to make dance music, and that's when I first started trying to make dance music.
And what were you doing mostly at that time? Were you like in rap?
I was rapping and producing rap beats.
Yeah.
So that's mainly what I was into. But at that point, I was like, oh, maybe I can do like an electronic thing on the beats and then rap over it and then make it kind of cool. I know Zed's Dead was one of my favorites too back then.
Yeah. They were on that kind of early.
Yeah. They had like a Omar Lynx on a few songs where he would rap on the shit and their beats would be like super sick. I'm like, dude, this is exactly what I'm trying to do.
Right.
So I would try to produce shit like that and rap on it. And it kind of just didn't go anywhere.
And you had, I mean, at least a little bit of a career, like at least like locally or regionally as a rapper, right?
Yeah, for sure. I was doing like, I had some good songs that were like played by like a bunch of radio stations and stuff like that. And it was okay. I wasn't making like a lot of money from it.
Right.
Not any kind of crazy recognition from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was like rapping a lot and I was trying to do that and it just got cheesy and boring to me. Mm. And I really wanted to focus on just making like dance songs.
You're more into the production side of it just in general?
Yeah. And I like the culture a lot better than the rap culture. Mm. At that time, there wasn't. Now there's like Rich Brian and, you know, Joji and all these guys that are like Asian rappers that it's socially acceptable now. I think back then it was still a little like on the fence on, you know.
That's interesting.
Granted that the kids today, that the 2000, like, you know, born 2000 kids are so non-racist and not, you know, it's the color lines are completely just not a thing now. I mean, it depends where you're growing up, like, obviously, but like for the most part.
For sure.
It's pretty blurry.
I mean, it's definitely better than it was. Absolutely.
Oh, for sure. So I would say like now it's like more acceptable that an Asian person is coming out rapping and it's
did you feel like a lot of people were just looking at you weird or judging you or that it was preventing you from doing something you wanted to do?
I don't think it was preventing me. I just think people didn't buy it as like I was a rapper. You know, I don't think it was like a oh, he's Asian.
Right.
No, but it's more like,
well, because really, like,
I don't know.
Because other than like, you know, Jin or somebody, like, who would the examples
but
be?
But even him, right? Like, he won that whatever BET rap thing. It did nothing for him.
It's true. I mean, he didn't have a Rough Riders.
And yeah. It wasn't like people just didn't buy into it. But I think now it's like being Asian, being black, being white, being Mexican, it doesn't even matter, like,
yeah,
like what you are anymore. As long as you're making like these turn up records and it sounds legit, like you're legit, right?
Absolutely.
And then you look the part or something, you got a fucking forehead tattoo or something. You know right. what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't matter about your skin color anymore. And now I can actually say that and actually back it. You're like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I fucking fully 100%, you know, back my own words and say that, yeah, I think Asian people can rap now and people won't give a shit. But 7 years ago, I don't fucking know, man.
Yeah, which is crazy.
I was a little on the fence.
It's crazy to hear you say that because that's not that long ago, but you're right. I think you're absolutely right, but that's really not that long ago. And I think you're right, too, that that's one thing the rave scene has always been better about.
Now, we run this shit. Asian people run this shit.
Well, yeah, Southern California, for sure you do.
Man, everywhere, bro. Like, I've been on this tour with Troy Boy, and, like, I swear to God, like, in Boston, most of the motherfuckers are, like, Asian there, man.
Really?
The rave, yeah. Boston, where else were we? Seattle. Dude, man, everywhere, bro. Even Chicago. It's like, dude, there's Asian people everywhere, man.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not saying we're the ones that got money, but it's like, we're the ones that spend money to go to a fucking rave. You know what I'm saying? Like, there might not be very many of us in like some of these cities, but they're the ones that go and party and go and, you know, spend money on, you know, whatever.
That's interesting.
Raves and whatever.
Yeah. I never thought about that, but I could totally see that.
It's at least half Asian for most of these spots. Like, and maybe not so much like Iowa or anything like that, you know, or like, or like Missouri.
Right. Do you have a big Asian fan base, like more than other people?
I don't. Like, I mean, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think last year and this year is the first time where I've actually noticed, like, goddamn, like, there's some Asian motherfuckers at my shit, you know? Like,
right.
Before that, no. It was all mainly Hispanic and, like, white people that liked my shit, you know?
Interesting.
And came to my shows. And now I'm starting to see more of, like, the Asian people like my shit. And I don't know if it's because I'm Asian.
Right.
I think it's maybe because I'm Asian.
Well, sure. Like, I mean, you know? I think for anyone, this is not Asian specific. I think for anyone, if you see somebody who looks like you or somebody you can relate to in a position that you'd like to be in yourself, I think it's way easier to be attracted to that person and to kind of, you know, put them mentally on that, in that position where you just think of them that way.
I just know that Asians stick together, man. And when they see an Asian face doing it, they're probably like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm supporting that because it's like, man.
Well, here, you know? Yeah, actually, now you're making me think, here's maybe a good way to put it, because you're right that I think a lot of Asian people are into this culture, but I would also say I don't see a lot of Asian people, you know, as the like headlining artists, you know what I mean? And so that actually makes total sense to me that of course there should be more representation on the artist side too. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's really, I don't know. I complain all the time. People tell me to stop on this podcast because EDM is just, it's so white and it bums me out because I know that the fan base is not, you know?
Sure.
And that's just like a weird disparity that I've never really loved about it.
Well, the thing is, it's like Asian people don't get the chance to take that step. I think you have to understand that when we take that step forward to being like, yo, fuck being a lawyer, I want to be a music producer. That's the biggest fucking taboo, you know, step into like something that you're literally disgracing your family type of shit. When you're like doing, when you're doing that, your parents are just like worried, sick. Like, oh, really? Like he's doing this? Like, oh my God, like I didn't raise you to do this, you know?
Well, especially I'm sure for like first generation parents too. Did your parents have those kind of misgivings?
Dude. Yeah, I lived off of fucking trap money for the longest time, man. And I mean, I'll say that. It's not even something that I want to hide or anything. But for a long time, my parents didn't support it. Yeah. You know, and I wanted to make music. I wanted to be a rapper. I wanted to do this. I want to do that. And I just didn't want to have a normal, you know, your stereotypical Asian life where it's like, okay, well, you have to go be a doctor, go be a lawyer, right. Go get your, you know, your law degree and all that.
Yeah.
Granted, I took my LSAT, scored fairly high, like was about to go to law school, all yeah. this shit. I dropped all of that to become a producer or a rapper or, you know.
Yeah.
An artist.
Was that for you? Was there some anxiety or some fear there when you sort of left behind the path that you knew what that looked like to go, you know, do this?
Nah, man. I never looked back. Mm. I think I was just 2 feet in and just kept going, man. And I think it didn't matter if I was broke. It didn't matter if I didn't make any money. I made no money for the first 6 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
like while you were rapping or in the band days?
Yeah. All of it.
Yeah.
Make no money. So, even as a producer, I started technically my first gig as a DJ was 2015.
Okay. So, not even that long
2014,
ago.
2015. I would say late 2014, early 2015.
Right.
Was my first real gig as a DJ. Got paid nothing. Obviously, you know.
Do you remember the first gig?
I do. I got to support Crizzly.
Oh yeah. Shout out to Crizzly, man.
Yeah. Love that. So that was my first show ever. Was a direct support slot to Crizzly. Shout out White Rabbit Group. Shout out Brandon. They've always showed, you know, they're the first people to put me on.
Oh,
I'm
nice.
Like, yo, he's a direct support slot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, awesome. At this place called the Yoast. I'm sure you remember the Yoast.
Yeah. Funny story about the Yoast. I can't remember if I've said this before on the show, but I played the opening night of the Yoast, like when they first opened it, and they were still like building it.
Yeah.
Like, so there was literally like a big crane behind me on stage.
My God.
Like they shouldn't have been open.
Right. That was a great little venue.
It was, yeah.
It wasn't too big, but it was awesome.
Oh man, legendary nights out there.
Legendary nights for sure. That Control Fridays, obviously, but like, I feel like when I started playing, Control Fridays was already kind of like on its way, like out, sort of.
Yeah, I never got to play there. Well, no, that's not true. Back, I used to DJ for some rappers. I was DJing for Kid Sister back in the day.
Cool.
And we played Avalon, the Control Fridays once when it was like the peak of it.
Right.
I still remember that. But then, yeah, as a solo like act, I only got to go and play. I mean, it was still really good, but it was definitely not those glory years.
No, I played there once when it was kind of like, it was already dying out. Control Fridays wasn't the same. I played with Alvin Risk.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking legend too. I loved Alvin Risk, but this was maybe 2016, 2017.
Yeah. I never really knew that guy, but his music was amazing.
Incredible. Yeah. But yeah, man. So DJing, I've only been DJing for like maybe 5 years now.
Right.
6 years. I've been producing EDM music for 6 years.
Right.
Which is, that's crazy. It's like, it just feels like literally last year, man.
Well, it seems like, okay, two things about it. I mean, it seems like really your career has been taking off just in the last couple of years, right? Like
last
really,
year.
Really. Yeah, last year, maybe.
I'd say like last year.
But all of that is to say, I think, and this is true for so many professions, but I think especially for in the creative field, like whether you're doing art or music or comedy, I think minimum 5 years to even get anywhere,
minimum.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, 10, even 10 years, like someone could tell me it took 10 years to really start popping. I wouldn't blink an eye, you know,
I'd say 10
because
I first started making music, my band and all that shit in 2008,
mm-hmm.
like literally 2008. So
were you touring with the band at all?
We followed the Warped Tour.
Oh, nice. You followed it around?
So I followed the Warped Tour around selling CDs just to make some money to get to the next city.
That's such a hustle.
Dude, fucking washing my face and brushing my teeth in Walmart parking lots, bro. Like literally every single fucking day.
Wow.
Got a hotel when we had a little bit of money, like motel, Red Roof Inn. You know what I mean? Nothing like, no fucking JW Marriott's, but the Red Roof Inn if we needed a shower for real, you know, once every like week or something, you know, but we would just literally wash our faces, brush our teeth, at Walmart parking lots.
Yeah.
And
that's such a grind, man.
And
following the tour around too, that's got to be.
It was Grueling, man.
Because they're not trying to help you out.
Hell no. Yeah. The fuck no, dude. We didn't even have passes to get in. Like, we were outside selling tickets to the first people in line.
Wow.
Like, that tickets, CDs.
Oh, yeah.
Your with CDs. Our little headphones and iPods. Like, yo, like, here, you want to check out my band? Want to check out my band? And, you know, on a good day, we sell fucking, like, you know, 50 CDs.
Right.
At $5 a piece, that's fucking $250.
Yep.
Enough to get a hotel and some, you know, everyone
get to the next city.
Everyone got a combo at the fucking McDonald's, you know? Like,
right.
And it's like, yeah, enough gas to get to the next city.
But what I will say, man, is, you know, going through experiences like that, and I haven't done that, but I've been in some grindy kind of situations, and it really makes you not only appreciate when things do get nicer, but I also think it just gives you a really strong mindset to succeed at all levels of the business.
Right.
Because you kind of know, like, you were doing everything literally and you weren't making anything. And now, you know, you're working your ass off in those situations.
Yeah.
And so anything else, at least personally, you know, anything that comes up, it's like, yeah, okay, we'll deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a problem.
Yep. Like, nothing bothers me now, man.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit, I've been through some shit, you know? And like, I've lived in a van for fucking 3 months. Like,
wow.
Literally, like, lived out of my van, you know?
And yeah.
Was homeless for a little bit. Like, didn't always have the support of the parents, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, it is what it is, man. And, you know, did what I can do on my own. So I don't take anything for granted. Even if it did take me 10 years, right?
Right.
And it's like, now it's like, dude, like, I could go broke tomorrow and I'd be fine. I know how to get back on my feet, you know?
Dude, but that's the key right there, right? Because you made it all this way on your own already.
But I do enjoy the nice things now.
Yeah.
You know, like finally I get to enjoy something that I've worked for, which is like, awesome.
Yeah, man. And it seems like your movement, whatever you want to call it, it really seems like it's starting to take off. I mean, I've just kind of in those sort of background ways, like, I just feel like I see your name all the time now.
Cool.
And, you know, randomly, whatever social media feeds, like, just popping up. And do you, I wonder.
That's funny because I feel like I'm falling off.
Really?
But that's social media, right? It's supposed to make you feel like you're not doing enough.
That's definitely social media. And I mean, for you, is there any, like, we'll get back to sort of the timeline of it, but I'm curious, you know, in the modern era, is there anything you changed about what you were doing? Or was there any kind of moment where you felt like everything really locked in or came together?
So, you know what and this is really important for anyone who's listening that wants to achieve anything in their life, is if you're going to commit to something, 100% commit every single vibe and cell of your body towards it. Because I would say for the longest time in my life, I thought I was so sure about my musical path and that I was going to do it. But I think I was always only 99%. Yes. I'm going to do it. But there's always this 1% of doubt in my mind. And I think that's what held me back for years. Not until I really was 100% in it and fully felt like, yes, I'm going to do this. Like, I feel it in my bones 100%. Yeah. And I want it bad enough. And I visualized myself doing it. That's when it changed everything.
Mm.
Which maybe 3 or 4 years ago, 3 years ago, I would say was like the year where I was like, you know what? This is the year. Like, I know I'm starting to build a groundswell and I'm not going to let my fucking anxieties and my brain convince me out of this, you know?
Right.
And I just fucking balls to the wall, threw some shows, fucking sold them out, like, did really fucking well. And I think there's a level of confidence that you have to have, obviously, but like, these moments kind of just excel. They kind of like build their confidence and like, not saying be conceited, but like, you know, there's a difference between being confident and being conceited, right?
Yeah.
Like, there was definitely a moment where I was like, I mean, even now I'm more confident than I've ever been in my life. But I think that has a lot to do with how you manipulate your future and how you manifest what you want to happen in your life.
Mm.
And if you want to manifest something, obviously, like, you can't, So, oh, I want to be the next fucking Elon Musk. I mean, I guess you can, right?
You can try.
Yeah, yeah. You can, I mean, it's like, you got to obviously like have the tools in front of you and you know what you're using to build it.
Right.
But like, man, like manifestation is fucking real. And I can't stress that enough, because sometimes things that have happened in my life that I've set, goals that I've set for myself, things that I've achieved, that's like not on some crazy grand, you know, grandiesque like scale, but like for myself at least, I'm like, what the fuck? How the fuck did I do that?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, I did that because I wanted it bad enough. And I made it happen. I manifested this shit to happen. And it fucking happens, yo. Like, I don't know what the universe is. I just know that whatever energy you want out of it, you can fucking get if you really fucking believe in it, you know, and work towards it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I think there's definitely something to that, you know, you get back what you put out.
For sure.
Saying, yeah, I would totally agree with that. And I think another thing, like while you were talking, part of what I heard is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like maybe there was a point where you stopped worrying about how you fit into everything else that was going on.
Yeah, for and, sure. Did not care what anyone else thought about my project. I think for the past year, 2 years, there was a little bit of a speed bump and a little roadblock for me where it just started, I started thinking too much about what people thought.
Yeah.
And I think the initial explosion, you know, and momentum that I've gathered was based off of not giving a fuck.
Right.
You know, and I think I gave too much of a fuck this past year or even last year. And it kind of like slowed things down for me. At least that's what I feel.
Did it, you know, that those kind of thoughts, did it change the choices you were making or the kind of music you were making? Or was it more just a mindset kind of thing?
I think it's just more of me worrying too much and my being in a darker place.
Mm.
And that in a sense like creates more problems as when these problems don't have to come around.
Right.
You know? And those are all manifested too. So you start having negative thoughts about your own project. You start thinking these negative things. Oh, do people like me? Oh, do the people like my shit? Or blah, blah, blah. Then fucking these other things start coming up because you're fucking attracting all this negative energy, you know? And I've learned that too. That's like one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in my entire life this year is that, hey, like I let that shit, I realize now that that's what was going on the past year. It's like, yeah. Yo, I let that shit fucking have the best of me, dude. Like, or get the best of me. I'm not letting that happen again.
Mm.
And I realized the initial, you know, why I have what I have now is based off of not giving a fuck and really firmly believing in what I believe in and pushing the project that I want people to see, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's interesting thinking about your project because in my mind, like, you're 100% a part of everything that's going on, but then also in a way like very separate. And what I mean by that is, you know, you're here, you're playing the same festivals everyone's playing, you're working with, you know, big names, people like Marshmallow, Rez, all that. But then I also look at what you're doing and I look at the people who follow you and it doesn't necessarily seem that dependent on what the scene is doing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
Like, does that, I don't know if that's intentional, but it's...
I don't think it was intentional. I think it's just, I've always kind of just did my own thing and people who like the project kind of just support the project. It doesn't matter who I collab with or what the music scene is like. It's kind of just more like, oh, fuck, we love you because, you know what? Like, for a long time, and I don't do it so much anymore. I don't have time, but my mind's elsewhere now.
Mm.
Focused on a lot of new music and just trying to get my mind, you know, healthy. But for a long time, I would respond to every single fan. It doesn't matter if you're fucking, you know, I could have 100 messages and I'm going to stay up until fucking
yeah.
5 a.m. and answer every single one and try to have at least a little conversation with every single person, you know?
Right.
And I think that's what was one of the things that really helped was that I never took the time to grow an ego in that aspect with my fans, right? And it's always been a wow, like, fuck, I appreciate you, like every single individual, because it's, you know, a lot of people don't take the time to do that.
Sure. Absolutely.
And, that's what helped. I feel like I think that's what initially got people to listen,
yeah,
and pay attention more and really be a part of,
and to keep following it. Right.
Right. And to be a part of my story. And it's not just me, it's us. Right. So it's like, they're a part of me. Like, and I think that's the difference between me and certain other artists, where it doesn't seem like I'm a part of the scene, because there's this whole scene and everyone's like, oh, like a high school and shit.
Right.
And I've never really wanted to be a part of that, even though like it's all the same, right? We're all part of it.
Yeah, yeah,
whether we want to be or not.
Absolutely. Do you think part of it is too, I feel like you have more of an international appeal or international presence than some artists, just in terms of, you know, you work with like
Jay Park.
Yeah, Jay Park and some other like Korean artists as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do a lot of Korean songs. I had the number one Korean song in Korea 3 years ago.
Damn, really?
Yeah, I produced the number one song for Jay Park. I was actually featured on that. He wanted me to rap on it.
Okay.
So I actually fucking rapped on that song too. So I was like, what the
fuck? Brought you out of retirement?
Yeah. Like, I'll rap on it. Like, cool. I'll spit some fucking, I can do it in English. And like, yeah, just do it in English.
Huh.
And that song went number one because it was picked up on this, by this TV show. And, that was one of the songs on the TV show. And because of that, like, it got this national exposure.
Wow.
And everyone bought that song.
What was that experience like, having a number one song in Korea?
I don't know.
You weren't there.
I mean, I wasn't there. And yeah. I mean, it's cool to say. It's like bragging, right? It's like, yeah, I had a number one song for, you know. Which is kind of cool because I looked at the charts. It was over Big Bang at the time. It was over like all these huge fucking K-pop acts.
Right.
And I'm like, damn, we did this shit. And, you know, that's cool. And I think ever since then, that helped me build my relationship with Jay Park. Who is one of one of my best friends in the whole world. He's, you know, out of everyone in my life who's shown me love and, you know, really has taught me a lot, I think that is one man who is consistently given, you know, to help me grow as an artist than anyone else. The most humble guy, the most just selfless person, you know?
Yeah.
And it's inspiring for me because it's helped me so much in terms of like, you know, maybe not as an EDM artist, right? But I definitely get the, oh, you're Ultron, like from K-pop fans all the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like people that are just from this other world that I've never even known about and through Jay. And it's helped me and inspire me to remain almost like selfless and learn that like, I don't need to be selfish to like, for things to come back around, you know?
Right.
And like, it's almost like a lot of people like to be selfish in the industry. And I've noticed that people like to like hoard their connections or like, oh, like it's me versus you type of attitude, as opposed to like, yeah, sure, we're all in this to help each other, right? And that's the mindset that Jay has, and is really kind of, it's rubbed off on me in a good way, in you know, where I've just like, hey, that's who I want to be as an artist. I want to help whoever the fuck I can help. Doesn't matter what connections I have. Oh, you need that connection? Yeah, I got you, bro. Like, you know, I'll link you with my guy, whatever. Like, you guys make some shit. Like, I'm just not one of those people.
Yeah, 100%, man. And that's great to hear you say, man, because I don't think there's enough of that. I'm very much of the same mentality where, if I have something that could help, sure, I'll help. I'm always down. But early on, I don't know if this was your experience, because that's always the way I've thought. And early on when I was just starting and I didn't really have a good support system or anything like that, I would, you know, reach out and try to help people and then just sort of expect that would come back to me.
Yeah.
And then you find out that exactly what you said, a lot of people don't think that way.
You can't expect people to help you back. It's just like, But
that's okay. You know, that's fine.
What you manifest, right?
Exactly.
When it comes back to manifestation, it's like, you think it's all right. Because those things, even if they don't help you right away, these things kind of come back around like, later on. You know?
Oh,
what I
yeah.
mean?
And they definitely did for me. It was just one of those things that it was a learning experience for me in the super early days to figure out that not everybody thought that way. So it's cool that, you know, you ended up linking up not only with somebody who does think that way, but, you know, I mean, he's, for the people who might not know, I mean, Jay Park, I mean, he's a celebrity in Korea, right?
He's a celebrity, yeah.
Yeah, like super celebrity.
Huge. There's a time we walked out in public and it was just literally like, I swear to God, I've been out with celebrities, like out to LA and shit like yeah. that. And it's crazy, but this is like, when we were in Korea, we went to an Umbro store, which is like a soccer store.
Yeah.
And he was the face of Umbro that year. I think they paid him to be like the main dude with his shirt off and whatever. You know what I mean? So like, he's like the face of Umbro. So let's go to the Umbro store. There's an Umbro store like down the street. Like, let's walk. I shit you not, man. We've walked one block. There wasn't one single person that we walked past that didn't know who he was. It was like, wow. Oh my God. And like, everyone followed us. Like, every single person followed us with right. their phone. And by the time we got to the store, we walk in. People are so respectful in Korea. Like, no one even walked in the store.
Wow, that's
they
nice.
Were just outside the windows, like literally like, looking like zombies with their handprints, like their hands on the windows, like, oh my God, Jay Park, with their phones out. Like, I swear to God, there's probably like 100 people, like,
wow,
just from walking on the street, like, just, you know,
yeah,
and people running to their friends, like, there's Jay's here. And they will all run back. And by the time, like, we left, it was legit, like, we had to like push our way, you know, like people had to push
yeah.
our way out and like run to the fucking car because it was like
starts
so
getting
crazy.
Weird, man. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That's actually a really good way to think about, you know, what it would be like to be famous for people who like can't imagine. Is imagine you walk down the street and literally every single person you see knows who you are.
Literally every single person. Yeah. Like, I mean, people here that are famous, like you can have fucking, I don't know, Will Smith, right? Ah, that's a bad example because everyone's going to know who yeah, Will Smith yeah. is. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there's certain people that are really fucking famous. Like yeah. Joe Rogan can walk down sure. the fucking street and not everyone's going to be like, oh, you're Joe Rogan.
Right, exactly.
Right, you know, he can still go get a cup of coffee, but probably get bugged by a few people. But like, it's not like there's 100 people outside with their cameras out like, yo, that's yeah. fucking him, you know?
Yeah, that zombie effect, man, you're right. That's something
that's
different.
That's a K-pop thing.
Yeah, I believe
that's
that.
That's a Korean entertainer thing.
I believe
and,
that.
And he's one of those guys, like Jay does not go out, man. Like, he never goes out. Like, and if he does, it's like to a club, you know, or like to a bar or something. Like, but usually like if we go out, there's private rooms. Like right. we don't go out. Like,
it's a different kind of life, man.
It is.
It's crazy.
I don't even understand it. Like I go out with friends sometimes and people ask for pictures like, oh, what's that like? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, man, this is fucking like normal. I mean, like, you know, like, that's like nothing. Like,
right.
that's like one person coming up to me. Like, that's not even like, yeah. you know, like, I can go on with living my life, like, for the rest of my life like this, and it's fine. Like,
right.
like there's certain people like, you know, Jay and other people that literally cannot go out. You
yeah.
know?
It's a whole nother level, man. Cause yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, if somebody wants to come up and take a picture with me, it's just kind of nice. You know, yeah. that's like a nice
a little stroke to the ego.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm famous.
Right. Yeah. yeah. And then you move on with your day. But yeah, man, if it was preventing you from just doing simple life shit.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
my God.
No, he can't even, man. It's just like,
and that's, to be honest, I don't know if you feel the same way. When I really had that realization was when I started being friends with people who are, you know, legitimately famous. Right. Cause when I started, like, way back when, I would just always think, yeah, this is, you know, I want to get as high as I can get in this game. Like, I want to do everything. I want to go as far as I can. And then when I saw what those people's lives were like, I was like, I don't know, man. Actually, it's pretty nice right here.
Yo, that's great. I love where I'm at.
Yeah.
I would hate to be fucking like famous, you know?
Yeah,
like,
famous.
Yeah, like, you know, like the people who recognize me are genuine fans and I love that. And I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like you've managed to create like a good community for yourself. I know you do the like rave prom
yep.
events and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, just talk about it for a second. What is that for the people who might not know?
So I do this party. It started off as just an underground rave thing a few years back when 2 years ago, three years ago, I wanted to throw my own show in LA. Headline it. No one wanted to help me out. It was like one of those things where I was like, yeah, I want to do my own show. I can draw. I swear to God, I have fans that will come. No one wanted to, no one wants to book you, man. Like, I don't know what to say, you know, type of right. show. I was like, fuck it, I'm going to throw my own show. I rented out this loft, like of this downtown LA party, downtown LA building, like an abandoned building where they used to shoot movies and shit like that.
Yeah.
The guys who owned it were heavy investors in early Bitcoin.
Oh, wow.
So these two brothers that just had a shitload of money, they yeah. bought the whole floor of this building. And they're like, dude, we love EDM. They even had like a booth already built there for their own private parties that they like, you know,
yeah.
some Eyes Wide Shut shit. I don't know, some fucking, you know, some crazy like Illuminati rich people party thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you can use it for free. We don't care. Like, you know, it's like, as long as we can invite all our friends to the party. I'm like, dude, fuck yeah. It probably fit like 700 people, 600-700 people.
Yeah.
The whole floor, right? And I did this thing where I was like, yo, like, I want to throw a free show to LA for all my fans that want to come, you know? Blew up, right? I was like, oh, shit, cool. We'll see if people actually come. I did a thing where I was like, yo, sign up for this texting list and I'm going to text you the address tonight, whatever. I think we got like 2,000 or 3,000, like, you know, names, like,
yeah,
like that, like in the day.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool, that's pretty good. I sent the text out at like 5 p.m. Like, show starts at 9. Yeah, we'll see you tonight, whatever. There's a fucking line. I saw the video of it. It's like a line that wrapped all the way around the fucking block. It was like maybe over 1,000 something kids, you know.
Yeah.
We only let up maybe 500, 600. So people were fucking pissed to the point where they like were in my DMs like fucking
of course
cussing me out like, yo, fuck you, we waited in line, you guys fucking cut it, blah 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 blah, you know. I was like, dude, yo, like,
yeah,
I didn't fucking know there's me that this many people.
Yeah,
here,
yeah,
right?
It's the first time you ever done it.
Yeah, so that was like a thing where I'm like, yo, shit, like, people actually came out to this shit. Like,
and how did they know about you at that point? Was it just from, you know, you'd been releasing music steadily for a while?
Yeah,
at that point,
music, and I guess, like, you know, just being at shows all the time.
Yeah.
And people seeing me, I was like, oh, who's that on stage? Or who did OK bring out? Or who did, you know, like,
right,
just like all these little things that it took me a long time to like grind for, to yeah. build like this presence, you know. It's like, it's really building your presence, right? Like, oh, who's that guy?
Well, and that's worth saying too, is, you know, you had, and I still have a friend group of people who are doing the same thing. And especially, I think in those early days, you guys were all really good about supporting each other,
yeah.
and lifting other people up.
Yep.
And, you know, like, yeah, OK and Kazo and yeah. all those guys. Yep.
So that's like, that was my friend group, right? Like the Kazo.com, OK, you know, just mainly just us four. Like,
yeah.
we kind of just have our own group, right? We kind of just like did our own thing, and everyone just started bubbling up on their own, you know, and doing their own. We're on our own wave, you know? And, but even this, like, this was like pre that.
Right.
Like, I think when I threw this show, this was like just, I've played a few shows in LA. I did the Crisley show. I did a show with Troy Boy. That was one of my first shows too, back in the day at Yoast.
Yeah.
Did my own show at Yoast, and it did okay. And it's just being around, I think, just, you know,
yeah.
the scene and playing a lot, you know, releasing music, like consistently releasing bootlegs. I think that was what was doing it for me. Like,
yeah.
When SoundCloud was actually still SoundCloud, like,
yeah,
consistently every month releasing one bootleg that was like kind of heavy to like a popular song, right? It's kind of cheating, but like,
no, I don't think that's cheating at all, man.
But that's what we did as DJs back then.
Exactly. Yeah.
People don't do it so much now.
It's harder to do it now. There's just less of an outlet for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what I did. And I think that's what it was. So that first show did really well. Second show, I think Insomniac finally sent us an offer. So, yo, we can do Belasco Theater for Yoltron.
Yeah.
We'll see what he can do, you know? And I specifically remember going into Insomniac offices and being like, yo, like, if we sell this out, like, can we just like do like two nights, or maybe like we'll do Palladium or something? And I remember one of the dudes looked me in the eye and was like, you know what? Like, we don't even like, to be honest, like, I'm not trying to sound mean or anything, but I don't even think you can sell out the Belasco. So let's just do that first. And maybe next year we could talk about the Palladium, whatever. I was like, all right, fuck it. Fine. You know?
Yeah,
tickets go on sale. 2 hours, 1,800 tickets. Boom, it was gone. Like 2 hours, like literally the fastest selling Belasco show in 2018.
Wow.
And they're like, fuck, holy shit, we should do two nights. I was like, I fucking asked you guys if we could do two nights or do a Palladium or something, you know? And then they're like, okay, cool, we'll do Palladium next year. Like, let's do it. We did Palladium in Hollywood. We sold that out this year in March. Was it this year? Yeah, 2019. Yeah, this year. We did it in March. And now we have like, I can't reveal too much, but we're doing a bunch of, you know, Brave Proms coming up in 2020.
That's cool, man. Different places in the country.
And just trying to like spread the brand around more than just Southern California and like West Coast. I did San Francisco. We did Regency Ballroom last year. We sold that out too. And it's just like a prom that's a rave. You know, it's like people that have had shitty dance experiences in their fucking high school years. You get to relive it on drugs. Like, I mean, I don't fucking know. Maybe not all, and not everyone's going to be on drugs, but it's just to relive your rave or relive your prom years or days, but in a different, you know?
I like that, man. I mean, this goes back to what we were talking about before. That just sounds fun. Like, yeah, you know, it doesn't have to be that complicated. That just sounds fun.
It's like a no-brainer, you know? Like one of those. It's like, I'm not trying too hard to be like, yeah, come to my crazy, like, I have a crazy stage production setup that's 17 million watts of fucking bass. You know, like, this is more like, yeah, I got a couple of fucking mannequins on stage with Hawaiian shirts and that's dressed as a band. And
I bet you get people like dressing up too, right?
Yeah, everyone's wearing like bow ties, but their sleeves are cut off and they have like an armful of candy.
Yeah, that's fun, man.
People just have a good fucking time, you know? They get to bring their dates and stuff, you know? And it's like, I don't know. It's just kind of a cool little gig that like, you know, I put together and it just turned out to be pretty, people like it. So that's just what I do on an annual thing now.
Right.
So now we're just trying to do it in every city.
And where are you at in terms of production and releasing music and all that? Is there anything you're working on right now? Anything that's coming up that you're really stoked on?
I have an EP coming out on Deadbeats, which is Zed's Dead's label. This is the first time in my life I'm releasing dubstep. So I've never made dubstep ever.
Interesting. So what changed? Because, I mean, we were talking about dubstep even earlier in this conversation. Yeah. And, you know, I think those of us from a certain mindset, there's like, there's always a little trepidation going into that world, right?
You know what it is? I like raving, right? I like being in the crowd and, you know, raging. Summer camp festival in Illinois. That's what changed it all for me. Mm. Went there, not going to lie, I did a tab of acid. Went into the woods and just fucking raged with a bunch of wooks, man. They were such nice people. And we were listening to just, they had this little camp out thing where they had this like school bus that came in.
Okay.
And there was like a DJ on the school bus and they had all these neon lights on this bus. It was just like insane, bro. And I was just like hanging out with these wooks and listening to dubstep, but it wasn't like the rhythm, like dubstep or bro step. It was just like wonky, like old school, I don't know, like spacey, the type of shit.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. My trip was insane. So I was just like, dude, like, I want to make shit like
it
this.
It made more sense to you after that.
Yeah. And I was like, dude, I can, not that, I can make this stuff too. I'm going to make it. It's more like, dude, I was inspired, you know?
Well, and you reference, I think it's awesome you're doing it with Deadbeats and Zed's Dead. I mean, you referenced them already as, you know, one of those early influences. Like, that's something they've always been so good at is, you know, sort of splitting the atom between super heavy and then also like complex and interesting and a little off the beaten path.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. I think that's a good link up.
And the sound is definitely that type of, you know, vibe. It's a Deadbeats vibe for sure. And I really fuck with Zed's Dead Heavy. Like those guys are great dudes, great supporters like of, you know, just up and coming music.
Yep.
And they're always pushing the needle towards, you know, what's cool, what's next, at least to me.
That's, well, and I would draw a parallel between you and them in that I don't think they've always just done what they wanted to do too, you know? And they just kind of built their own world for it.
Yep.
Yeah. No, those guys are super inspiring.
And I think this EP is going to be like, for the past years, I've been doing a lot of hard dance. So there's a lot of up-tempo, like reverse bass, like UK donk.
Right.
Shit.
I love the donk.
Me too. And that's all I've been making. And I think personally, I've released enough of those, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think people want to keep hearing it, which is like, it's cool. And I fully understand when artists are like, you know what? Like, I can't keep making the same shit, man. Like, fuck. Like, let me make something else.
Right.
So I think this will be an EP and people will be surprised at what they hear. But I'm stoked on it. So I hope people like it. So
Well, yeah, man. And like we said, if this has been your mentality since day one of just, you know, sort of going where your heart takes you, I think you got to keep doing that. And that's probably what attracted people to you in the first place.
Right.
Is there anything else we haven't talked about? Anything else on your mind?
Man, I think we talked about pretty much damn near everything.
Yeah, we did good.
My life story. Let's go.
Well, I'll wrap it up just by asking the same question I ask at the end of each one of these episodes. Just a time in your life, a memory, could be from any time, young or old, when in a moment music really meant something to you, really had a deep effect on you. And it's kind of just the first thing that pops into your head.
The first moment where I realized that music had a crazy impact on me was probably when I saw Weezer.
Oh, okay. When was that?
I don't even remember. I was a kid. But I remember watching Weezer, which is one of my favorite bands of all time. Jimmy Eat World was opening.
Okay. That's a good bill.
I think I was like damn near center in the front, like at the rail.
I mean, are we talking like 13 years old?
Yeah, I was probably like 15.
Okay.
Yeah, like 15 years old. I was with my girlfriend, my high school sweetheart.
Right.
We were together since we were like 14 and shit. So like we went to the concert together. We saw him we saw Weezer. And I remember Rivers Cuomo. I know he probably just looks at everyone, right?
Yeah.
But he looked at me in the eye and like he sang, I forgot what fucking song, dude.
Yeah.
It was so long ago. But I remember at that moment, I was like, yo, like this change, like just the energy between like a fan and the artist, I was like, this is like something that I want to do one day. Like, this is a dream, right? Like, I'm not sure if this is ever going to happen. If I can ever be a Rivers, be on stage and do that. But that was a moment where I was like, fuck, like, I want to be a rock star.
I love that story, man. I've definitely had those kind of moments. And I think there's something to what you said too about, there's something in between the performer and the audience. There's something in the middle, right? Like some kind of energy, some kind of connection. And when you really tap into it, it doesn't happen every time, but when you really get to tap into it from either side, that's a special moment, man.
Special moment, man. And that was like one of the moments I'm gonna like remember forever. And you know what's fucking crazy? Is that Rivers Cuomo follows me on Twitter.
Oh, shit.
He like followed me one day and he doesn't follow that many people. So I'm like, it wasn't like some spam. Like he follows like 30,000 people. It's like he only follows like 1,000 people. And like,
did you ever talk to him? Do you know
why? I messaged him and he never responded. But I'm like, why did he fucking follow me? That's so crazy. Weird.
Maybe you just manifested it, man. Maybe he didn't even know why he was doing it.
Who knows? Maybe he liked one of my, I don't know. Who knows, man? But that's just crazy. I'm just like, damn, this is one of my favorite bands. And he's one of my biggest inspirations of all time.
Hey, man, that's a sign you're doing something right.
Let's try to get that Rivers Cuomo Weezer collab.
100%. Well, hey, man, this has been fun. Thanks for sitting down and doing this.
Dude, of course, man. This is awesome.
Peace.
Bye, buddy. Later.
Right, that's the show. Shout out to Yultron. Great to have you on, man. That was super fun. Actually, later in that day, we ended up hanging out with Graves at a weird bar, eating some bar food together and just kind of walking around looking at the weird shit on the walls. That whole day was super fun. And all of that is to say, for everybody out there listening, I hope you have a fun day. I hope you're feeling good. Don't forget to check out Yultron. See him on the Rave Prom Tour. Grab all his music. The link for that is in the description of this episode. And you can keep up with me too. I'm at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod on all social media. And the email address is backtobackpod@gmail.com. That's it for this week. Another episode in the can. I got to go run and meet a friend at a studio to make some more music. So I will keep this brief and just say, I hope you're feeling good. I hope you have a great week. Take care of yourself, and I will talk to you next Tuesday. For Back to Back, this is Willie Joy. Peace.